Hi, I'm Uriel.
And I'm Nick.
And welcome to Hella in Your 30s.
This week, we go see our first improv show since COVID.
Let's do yoga. Let's get fit. Let's do jumping jacks. And we'll get rich. But oops, I found that bottle of gin underneath the sink again. So tomorrow's a new day. Let's order pizza.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Hella in Your 30s. Listen, this is a podcast for people of all ages, except probably kids, all about navigating this dystopian world we live in.
Oh, damn. It's a little bit of a blustery day here in Seattle. Got this iced coffee just coursing through our veins. We are alive, and life is electric.
Yes.
We love you. All right. So, Muriel, we went to see our first show. We went to a show.
We went to an improv show. And we've talked about improv on this podcast.
Yes.
But this was such a celebration. So improv for us, we've been doing it together for like, I don't know, 13 years.
Muriel, before we start recording, she goes, I don't want to talk about comedy in general. We need to be specifically about improv because improv is comedy for nerds talking.
I was like, it was the nerdery of it. This is like this thing that we both love, right? And we started doing it. We started taking classes 13 years ago in Seattle at this particular theater where we just saw our first show in almost 2 years.
Yeah.
And it brought back so many memories.
It was just nostalgia lane, baby.
It's crazy. And it's something really specific about improv, right? Because like Nick's done a ton of stand-up and we've branched out and I've done theater and we've done, you know, scripted stuff.
Yeah,
and
we've made our web series. You know, we would
podcasts.
Even we would consider these podcasts comedy, if you can believe it or not.
But like the real deal is it all started with these classes. And I was watching the show and just having the biggest heart melt for the people performing, doing this, like, I don't know, this art form that I think is incredible and I've always loved and also is fundamentally, you can't talk about it without just like really nerding out. It's, like it's a...
but not nerding out in a like the ways the galaxies coalesce in Star Wars. I mean, it's just embarrassing.
I mean, that's what we do. And like we're kind of different, like Nick and I, right? Because I came from theater before I started doing improv. And so I have been doing like a, you know, I slit a sheet, I slit upon a slitted sheet, I sit. Right? Like, you know.
That since you were like 6 years old.
Yeah, a butcher's black block and a feather fock fock or whatever. Like, I've been doing that since I was like eight, you know, and really running around and dramatically like feeling like there's so many high stakes, like waiting for Guffman, you know.
Stretching your face out in the mirror.
Yeah, making O's. And, you know, I want to say this for real.
Yeah.
There is something that just still lights me up about that. And I know now as an adult who's done this for a long time is like, I know now what it looks like, whereas before I didn't.
Yeah.
But I still love it so much.
Yeah.
When you came from, like, I think you're way cooler than me because you're basically.
You always
playing,
say that, but
you
it's,
are.
It's
you were playing baseball.
Weirdly.
You were like doing sports.
Well, I got into filmmaking in college because basically what happened, if everyone wants to know my little origin story, was I was casting about trying to find my identity. So I was like into writing, poetry, and then like photography and drawing and music and all this stuff. And then I started like whatever, I was a freshman in college, like getting stoned and watching like film.
Yeah.
And then I just had this not original thought, but also very stoned sort of feelingly like epic in the moment of just film is the coalescence of all of those things. It's photography meets people, meets music, meets story, meets writing. You know what I mean? So I was like, filmmaking is my thing. So then I started like writing scripts and making short films. And then shortly after graduation, Muriel and I decided to start going out. And I had just made my first short film and I had written a short film for us to act in. Mm-hmm. Because also in my first short film, I was just like, well, I'll be the actor.
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't I be?
And you were great.
I just had that confidence of just like, well, clearly I'm the lead. You know, it's a personal piece about my Italian-American identity.
Which
like,
was
going
so
to be
good. It was such a good short
film. Well, that was
film.
One thing that was really special to me is we were just getting together and you understood that it's called On Top of Spaghetti. And you understood it. I don't know why I told you guys the title. It's not like online or available or anything.
You have a lot of DVDs.
I have literally in my mom's closet. I still have a box of like 300 DVDs.
Hey, if you sign up for our Patreon, we'll send you a DVD in the mail. And you're going to have your mind blown at how good Nick was.
Okay, so anyways. But you really did sort of get what I was going for. And we would talk about it. And I really felt understood and heard by you. I felt seen. I felt witnessed. And then I wanted to write a short film that drew a lot from your life and a lot from my life. And I wrote this script and you read it and you were just like, also just really understood it. And it was really kind of like bringing us closer. It was just sort of this like thing where we were really understanding each other. And then I was getting ready to, we were going to film this project. And I was like, you know what? What if we just, got some acting together under our belt before we hit the set, right? Like, let's not just put all the pressure on this being good. Let's not have the first time we've ever acted together be in this movie when the stakes are going to be high and I'm going to be worried about equipment and all this stuff. I was like, so let's sign up for an improv class.
Mm-hmm.
So we signed up. Unexpected Productions, baby, located in the historic Pike Place Market in downtown Seattle. And we signed up. And not only did it launch us into just, you know, years and years, you know, devoted to the cult of improv. But also, I felt like it really helped our relationship in its infant stages, you know?
Well, that's how we learned how to do art stuff together.
And to talk about things.
And to talk about things. And that's the key to this whole thing, is right. that you watch something and then you go home and you talk about it for 3 hours. And so when Nick and I started taking these classes, so for anybody who hasn't taken an improv class, okay, so you walk into the building and you walk into the class and everybody, it depends on what it is, but a lot of the times, like half the class is pretty nervous and half the class is like the most hyped people ever, right?
They're like ready for Saturday Night Live,
right? And they're making friends and, you know, making bits and like,
yeah.
So like one half is everything is exhausting about it. And you have to kind of figure out how you fit in the mold, you know, because you want to be like, well, I'm not like as hyped as these guys, but I'm gonna be braver than these guys.
Yeah.
You know, you're already coming in with this like, I don't know, judgy attitude.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no way, this is the thing.
Yeah.
Judgment is the number one killer of anything fun, right?
Right.
And that's the truth. And when you're doing improv, like judgment is just sucks the air out of the room. It stops you from being able to perform. It stops you from being able to listen, all of those things. But anyone, including myself, who gets excited about improv can at times be a prime candidate to be judged. So if you walk into a room and everybody's acting like too cool for school or like really uptight and being like, well, what are we even doing? I don't even understand what this is going to be. It's like you bought the class. Just chill out.
Yeah.
Or you're like running into people who are saying, hey, man, how are you? Yeah, are you from Seattle? Oh, I came up from Tacoma. You know, you're just like, oh, my God. It's like, yeah, we should all just go out afterwards and get some burgers. You know, like just hype.
Yeah,
and
right.
After,
do you watch Kids in the Hall? I love Kids in the Hall.
It's like a magnet for people with strong personalities, I feel like. But once you get in it and you have to like let go of judgment, then all of a sudden you see that everybody around you is very fun. Like there's a lot of fun stuff happening. So it's very, you know, I mean, it's like for anybody who's slightly introverted, you know, or is not used to taking the type of risks that may not seem cool. You know what I mean? Like maybe you're a cliff jumper, but like you maybe wouldn't like, I don't know, do a speech about like your favorite song and why it's important to you. Like we're looking more like that kind of risk, right?
Yeah, not anything actually brave or courageous.
But it is brave and courageous.
I know.
Like you're talking about.
This is, I'm just saying, we're not firefighters.
No, that's what I'm saying. We're not. But I mean, there is a certain bravery in having to be like really vulnerable, yeah, judgment free, say yes to people's ideas.
Well, I guess that public speaking is one of the top fears amongst people. It's one of the things, yeah, people most fear is public speaking.
Well, we had a couple guys in our very first improv class. Like, I can remember a handful of people in our very first one. There was a couple that was like super, super religious.
Yeah.
And then there was one, they were really young and they were married and they were younger than us.
Yeah.
And I just remember being like trying to figure out what their deal was, because there was some weird stuff going on. Like, they had some like gender dynamics where the girl was really, really good.
Yeah.
And the guy wasn't as good, but the girl was like hyper focused on hyping up the guy.
Right. He was clearly in charge, even though she was like way better,
like
at
very
it.
talented, but yeah, that was their dynamic. And then, yeah, there was one guy who was like, I don't know, we were all in our early 20s and he was probably in his late 50s and he had done Toastmasters.
Yeah.
And he,
yeah,
wanted to do something more fun than Toastmasters.
Yeah.
But he could, like,
I forgot about that guy.
That guy was the best. He would just kind of do scenes, and I mean, he didn't understand any of the mechanics of doing anything on stage, yeah, such, yeah, as like facing the audience or, yeah, talking, you know, like he didn't really, yeah, understand any of that. And then there, yeah, was this, yeah, super hyped, I mean, she must have been about 30. She was like a soccer coach. Remember her?
Yeah, I definitely remember her.
And we would do these exercises.
And she just kept trying to win.
She tried to win these exercises don't have
a
winning
thing.
You
don't win.
Like, there's a improv game. So, like, if you, okay, I want to paint this picture in case anybody has not been to an improv class.
Which probably is almost
everybody,
everyone,
right,
listening.
So you walk in, like I said, you've got these dynamics of different people. We're all here in the same place. We're all kind of being vulnerable. You know, teacher walks in and you're going to play a handful of games. So one of those games might be Zip Zap Zop.
It's really not a game. It's basically just react with a sound and emotion.
It's
based
a game.
It.
It's technically a game. It's an improv game. And you point to different people and you're like, zip. And they're like, oh, zap, zap. You do that for like 40 minutes and you're all adults. Or you play a game where, this is the one that always killed me, yeah, is you have to think of an adjective that starts with the first letter of your name. And then so it describes you.
So I'd be like Nefarious Nick.
Right. Or mine was always Magical Muriel. Right. And then you have to come up with a big gesture to accompany it. So then you go.
You do jazz hands or some,
right,
shit.
So, yeah, you've got like 12 awkward adults standing in a circle. One person will be like, I have a big, like a big hello, right, yeah, with jazz hands, and be like, Magical Muriel. And then everybody in the circle has to go, Magical Muriel.
And then it's my turn, and I turn my like hands into like glasses, yeah, or whatever. Go, Nefarious Nick.
You know, Nefarious Nick. And then you pass it. So then I would go, Magical Muriel, Nefarious Nick.
Nefarious Nick. Yeah, whatever.
Perfect. Yeah,
yeah, perfect Pete.
Right.
Or whatever.
So that's how we learn each other's name. So, yeah, those exercises we just described would take up probably an hour. Okay. Really. And you know, and then there's a bunch of other like agreement exercises, like red ball, blue ball, right? Like, I have a red ball. Thank you, red ball. Here's a blue ball. You play these games. And I'm gonna say this, I've taught improv for a while, and as much as I hate playing those games,
yeah,
they really do help. Like, people, yeah, loosen, yeah, up, and it's like a cult. So it gets you in a position where you're going to accept more humiliation, you know?
Yeah, right.
But it does like also get you out of this space of judgment. Like, the way I see it is like, yeah, you're throwing people in the deep end of the most embarrassing thing they can do in front of a bunch of strangers. And then you do it for an hour,
yeah,
and then you do another exercise for an hour. And as you're doing it, you're shedding a lot of that blockage that keeps you from being open to ideas.
Unless you're a soccer coach that in our improv class, and she's like, I'll take your red ball and keep your red ball.
Yeah.
And she's like not passing the red ball.
Well,
it's like, you know, keeping the ball, you don't win any. There's no points here.
The classic example of this lady, I loved her so much. We played slow motion samurai fight. Okay, so this is another game, lasts about 25 minutes. So everybody in the room, their pinky finger, you pretend like you have a samurai sword that extends out of your pinky finger by like a foot and a half. and you walk around the room in slow motion, as slow as you can, and try to slice people and stab them with this imaginary knife. And the whole game, there's 2 points. One is object work, right? So you're pretending you have a sword. How do you move that sword? How does it move through space? You know, right?
And like the fun of having a slow motion death.
Right. And that's the other thing.
It's like way more fun to die than it is to slice someone.
Well, the point is a theatrical death. That's like everyone in the game eventually dies a theatrical death. And so it doesn't matter how long you last. It's like the death is the most important thing.
Yeah.
And this lady would be moving through slow motion, and if she was about to get killed, she'd move really fast to kill you. And the teacher just kept being like, what are you doing? Because she was just so hyper competitive. She was wild, man. But anyway, that's like what an improv class is like. You know, it's there's a lot of vulnerability and a lot of awkwardness and a lot of like, you know, what are we doing? You know,
of
like,
course.
What is this thing?
Yeah. There was also a guy. Oh man. He's of Eastern European descent. And I know his name. I'm just not doing it for privacy things. And
but imagine a name that's like, oh, it's the greatest name.
So he was like kind of this young professional dude who was like, had a good job and was out here, but wanted to like get more comfortable with English and all this stuff.
Well, he was in computers, I think, like computer.
I don't think he is anymore. You know why?
Why?
I think he's one of the top salesmen at the Audi dealership Liz works at.
No way.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I think it's him.
Well, this guy was literally the funniest man I've ever met. Like, and if you're talking about somebody who's pure and has no judgment and is just there and present and literally doesn't know what is embarrassing in the culture. Like he would go up there and he was still learning English. So sometimes that's also very funny because like what he's saying, he's just taking a leap, jumping off the cliff and then saying something.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, says something that doesn't make any sense, but with 100% conviction.
Yeah.
And it was just, he'd have people just dying. We would just be dying on the floor.
And I think it served him well because I think he makes a crap ton of money these days selling luxury cars.
He was so charming. Yeah. I cannot. We have to go spy on him and see what
I know.
So that is kind of what it was like, you know, the first day of class, right? And the second part of like our bonding, I think, is creative partners and are like cementing into the cult of improv. Was definitely then after the 3-hour class of playing slow motion samurai, red ball, green ball, you know, zip, zap, zop.
Word at a time story.
Word at a time story.
3-line scenes.
We would go and sit in a bar and talk for like 4 hours about what we just did and be like, but the thing is you have to like not, you have to be present and not think of it before you say it. So when they say red ball to you, you know, you're having this moment of like jumping off the cliff. I mean, but like these games are so simple and we're like adults. Like, I mean, we were probably 25.
Well, and to the performers that are still out here in Seattle, God bless them. But for us too, there isn't improv to see. So there's this one theater that does stuff. And I guess like you could, I knew kids, I guess, that did it in high school, but I wasn't even aware of it.
There's stuff. There's Jet City
and
UP.
But I guess my point is that when we moved to Chicago and started taking classes there, if you were like just one of these people we kind of described who signed up for a class in Chicago, you then had 100 shows every night in different theaters with different styles with like full audiences to actually watch and learn improv. And so conversations might be a little more like, I don't know. Like we were also just trying to figure out what improv actually was.
Yeah. I mean, in Seattle at the time,
you
know, we would go and see shows, but there just weren't a lot of shows.
Yeah.
And we were learning this.
And you're seeing the same 18 people perform each time.
Right.
Or
but in class, you're learning this art form that feels limitless, you know? And so you just don't know how to, you're just processing it. Like, we just got so into this idea that, like, you're going to walk on a stage and make up whatever you say.
Yeah.
Like that this is going to be completely spontaneous. So this is a good thing to also bring up is there are lots of different types of improv, right?
Yeah.
And so most of the ones that the style that people are really familiar with is usually Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yeah.
Where you play these, it's called short form improv. So you have a game and then you all like improvise little bits within the game.
Yeah, you know? and you get a suggestion from the audience. You do a funny scenario that has like some limitations on it. That's sort of what defines the game. Then it's over, everyone claps, and then the person comes out again and says, now for this next bit, we need a new kind of suggestion
right. With
these new sets of limitations and whatever.
So an example would be there's a game that they played a lot called Dinner Party, right? And there's somebody in the dinner party, he's the host, and every person who walks into the dinner party has some sort of quirk that they can't say, right? So maybe my thing is I'm deathly afraid of water. So I'd enter this party, be like, hey, Chuck, you know, we're improvising this thing. How are you? I'm so happy to be here and see you. And he's like, great, great. And we're having dinner and I go, you know, man, it's just so great to see you. And he's like, yeah. Would you like to light this candle? And I'm like, oh, yeah, sure, sure, light the candle. It's like, oh, cool, cool, cool. Like trying to figure out what my quirk is, what I'm afraid of, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe he'll go, oh, let me get you a glass of water. And I'd be like, no, no, you know, whatever.
Right.
And then he would guess, oh, you're afraid of water.
Right, and then they would give it a little ding, ding, ding.
Right.
Like, that was our game, everyone. Thank
exactly.
you so much.
Yeah, so, I mean, one time there was a game that I played once at a show. It was a big Christmas show, and it was packed. It was like probably 150 people in this like tiny room, and they dressed me up in a Santa Claus costume, and I had to, people would get their suggestion from the audience. They say, who am I?
Uh-huh.
And then that without me hearing them. And then I would sit down in the Santa Claus costume and they'd come and sit in my lap and ask me for presents. And I had to guess who they were based on the presents.
And it was like a celebrity or something.
Yeah, it was a celebrity. Uh-huh. And I crushed it. For some reason, I made him have a British accent, which people love.
This is British Santa Claus.
I don't know why I did that.
Played by a biracial lady.
Oh, what a good child you are. Come here, sit in my lap. What do you want for Christmas? Nailed it. So people just love that. So that's like the short form thing. So the stuff that Nick and I were doing at the beginning and pretty much always was something that they call long form. So that's scene based. You know, there's no game necessarily. It's more about like walking into a space and having a like inventing a character and inventing an environment. And
but kind of functionally what it means is you take the stage usually with a team of people, anywhere between like 2 and 10 people, and you get one suggestion from the audience, and based on that one suggestion you then perform for 30 minutes.
Right. And it's more like a play, like a structured play, and you're making up every single component of it. So every single scene, every piece of dialogue, every character, everything is completely made up as you go. And we've done that in lots of different forms, like 45-minute musicals and like, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. But you know, when you don't have a strong frame of reference for what you're doing, it just feels like black magic.
Yeah, they were like trying to explain this stuff to us. We'd be like, okay, we got it. And then we get on stage and do it, and they were like, that's not what we're talking about at all. It's like, well, and then in retrospect, it's so clear to me. It's like, well, we couldn't see it. We didn't know what they were talking about. So what we would do is we would just go to Il Bistro or Amanti after class and sit there and just have really epic conversations about what improv actually was.
Yeah, it's 2007. Britney Spears, it went a little crazy and then came out with this sick-ass album with like Gimme More on it. Do you guys remember that? Gimme More.
I love that song.
And like that would be playing constantly in the background in these bars. And we would just sit there and talk about like give and take and listening and how to say yes and how to be present. Yeah. I mean,
what the potential of improv, you know, has in store, like how far you could take it. Meanwhile, if you just went to see any show in Chicago, you'd be like, oh, we get it. People have figured that out 20 years ago.
Right. But it's exciting and it's new,
yeah.
You know, and then we had this whole journey. So like we went to Chicago and we were there for 5 years and we performed there like, I mean, a lot of the time we were doing like 5 shows a week, you know?
Yeah.
And then you would go whenever you didn't have a show, you'd be watching a show.
Yeah.
And you would catch double headers. Like sometimes I would watch 4 shows in a night, just back to back, sitting at the bar, drinking like a beer and just watching like you know, and we were
spent so many nights like that.
Yeah, and all our friends were like that. So it was just constantly like rotating in and out. It's like, oh, I've got a show, but I'll meet you over here. We'll watch this together. Then we'll go see our other friend's show. And then we'll all go and then play our third show together.
You know, for me, those years in Chicago, really getting deep into it, which we sort of signed up on accident. We didn't even know what we were really getting into at all when we moved to Chicago. And much like any cult, I think, you just think you're like, oh, we're like building jam, you know, we're selling like picture frames or some little crafty thing. And then suddenly you realize there's a God and they're telling you what to do and you have to say yes. But those years and really being dedicated specifically to like this theater called IO, that was like in this like dank little freaking black box, like actually incredible comedy space in the heart of Wrigleyville, and like we really dedicated to that and Second City and Annoyance to a lesser extent, and really just a part of that and with people. A lot of us had moved to Chicago kind of for this thing, and those were what I would consider my actual college years.
Yeah,
you know,
right?
They were so important to me.
Yeah, and they were so fun. I mean, there's a lot of camaraderie that comes with it, and you know, it's hard to explain what it's like when you do a show that really comes together and sort of surpasses everyone's expectation. And the idea is like behind, especially long form, is it doesn't matter if one person is really good or whatever. The show will never be better with everyone having their best show individually.
Yeah.
It'll only be good if everyone is having their best show collectively. Like that's always going to be better than somebody just knocking it out of the park in a mediocre show.
Right.
And when you're with a handful of people and you're able to create something just from scratch, just your bodies on stage, and you're trusting each other enough to be heard and to like listen and to validate each other's ideas and make everyone feel like they're a part of the thing. When you get off stage, it's like incredibly bonding, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't have a single friend from college.
Yeah.
I had this dude I lived next to in the dorm. I hung out with him every day. I remember that was the first person that I smoked weed with every day for a week. And I was like, damn, I've never smoked weed every day for a week. You know, that was like this big bonding experience with him. I hung out with him every day and I don't even remember his name.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have any friends. And from Chicago, I have so many friends. It was really trippy too. During pandemic, when I was trying to get in touch with what I missed about society, like what I really was lacking, because we'll talk about this a little bit more, but Muriel and I, through Chicago and the 7 years we were in LA before the pandemic hit, we just kept performing, so we were always on stage. And when the pandemic hit, that goes away, right? And to be honest, I didn't actually miss performing that much, but I did find myself really nostalgic for something, and I was trying to pinpoint it, and it was those Chicago days and that camaraderie.
Yeah.
And we were there from like 25 to 30 years old. And I would say from 25 to 29 years old were the golden days. And that last year was a little iffy, but there was 4 years that really felt like we were in something with people that were also in it with us.
Yeah.
You know, and some of those people are still our best friends. And it was the perfect sort of conglomeration of youth meets cult and like trying to do something and be a part of something, and our cost of living was really low. You know, we used to make great money bartending, and you know,
that was its own thing. You know, you would be out with all your, like, we're still really good friends with people that we waited tables with, and like, you know, it was just a really magical time.
I love you in that special kind of way. We'd forget about our pains and our sorrows. We'd smooch and love and lay around all day. And maybe if I hadn't been drinking, I'd show you that special kind of day.
We do interrupt this thrilling conversation about improv to give you a little ad. So for our ad space today, we're going to shout out someone who left us a really great 5-star review.
That's right. This is from Iman May. Thank you so much. I'm in my 20s and I relate. Easily the best podcast out there. It took me too long of time to leave a review just because I was being selfish and didn't want to share these welcoming, amazing, funny people. Thank you so much.
You know what? I love that too, because I'm just going to put her on blast a little bit. She DM'd me and was like, hey, how do I leave a review? So I sent her a little link and she said, okay, well, now I have an Android, so I have to go find my old iPhone and get it rebooted so I can leave a review on Apple. Aww. So that's a person going above and beyond to show his love. And it is so meaningful when you leave those 5-star reviews for us on Apple Podcasts. And I know a lot of you guys listen to us on Spotify. So if you want to spread the love on Spotify, something you can absolutely do that would help Muriel and I directly is add this episode or any of your favorite Hell in Your 30s episodes to playlists on Spotify. If you come up with a playlist of different podcasts that maybe you think your friends might like, just including us on any podcast playlist is huge. So that's it.
That's
you know
it.
What I mean?
Enjoy the rest of this slice of life, baby.
'Cause the whiskey has gotten the best of me, dear. Beer has taken all my pride and now I'm missing on you, baby.
If you do a show and it doesn't and it goes really poorly, you can also bond in the tragedy of that. Yeah. Because like the cool thing I miss about Chicago is that there was just more of a healthy variety of people in the audiences.
Yeah.
So you'd often be performing for people who were not students, didn't know what they were watching, thought it was going to be stand up, angry that they're there.
It's like a sold out crowd of tourists who are just like, Chicago's known for comedy. Let's go see some.
But they're not expecting us to all go on stage. Like, okay, so the IO, there's just so much about this. So like IO is known for the signature thing called the Herald. So other theaters like Upright Citizens Brigade and other places teach the Herald, but it was originated in Chicago with the people who founded IO, right?
Yeah.
And a Herald is a really trippy thing because it is really nerdy. Like you really can't deny it, but it does have the potential when they're very good to be so funny.
So what a Herald is it that's like a loose structure so that before you get on stage, while everything is improvised, you do kind of know not any sort of plot points or character or lines of dialogue, but just sort of like the first you're going to do a group opening with everyone on stage. Then you're going to clear. Then two people come out and do a scene. Then another two people come out and do a scene. So it's like a structure.
Right. And you don't know who's going to be the two people who are coming out, but it's a base. It's kind of like saying, you know, most blockbuster movies have a structure, right? You have like a linear structure,
right?
Or like at most top 40 songs have something where you have verse, chorus, bridge.
It's
verse,
not more
chorus.
Than that. Right. It's just like, oh yeah, a song has a verse, then a chorus, then a verse, then a chorus, then a bridge, and you know. Exactly
and
that.
Once you and like you know, music in itself, I think it's music is maybe the easiest analogy. Is also within music, you know, you have. Everyone has to listen to each other, right? And we all have to kind of contribute. We all have to play at the same pace. You know, we have to have some cohesion. And then there are a lot of internal sort of structures, right? So, you know, music is broken up into bars and measures. And there are a certain amount of notes per bar. And those are just the things that create the structure that help you effectively communicate your idea, right? So as you learn improv, it's like you start to learn all of these internal structures of performance. But like music, once you get better and better at understanding those structures, you can start to break them, right? And so you can start to really break different types of structures and make your, you know, bridge come first and then, you know, have like two choruses back to back. Like you can start to do anything. Herald is like a really classic top 40 structure, right? For music. And typically the way that it this is what I want to say is that it's like 25 to 30 minutes, and sometimes they're terrible, sometimes they're mediocre, and occasionally they're brilliant, right?
Right.
And those shows can really rock someone's world. We've done that a few times. Like, I can probably count on two hands the amount of shows that I've been like, that was legitimately, objectively
a brilliant, great piece of entertainment.
Right. And then I could probably say there's 400 shows that I've done that have been not very good, right? And then maybe 200 that are like, yeah, that was fine, right? Like something
no,
like
I
that.
No, I think that's probably more like you've done 100 shows that were like, yikes, and then probably 300 that were like, that was serviceable. Everyone laughed. That was good.
No, more than that. I've probably done 1,000 like that.
Yeah.
But anyway, so regardless of whether or not it's going to be good, mediocre, or bad, you kind of always start a Herald with the most embarrassing thing, which is everybody coming on stage and being like, so the way that you do it is you walk on stage and you go, hey, everybody, we're Dreamcatcher. We'd love to do an improvisation for you. We're going to be performing a Herald. To get us started, we just need a suggestion of any word at all.
Butthole.
Butthole. Great. Thank you. And then everybody looks at each other. And there's lots of ways to do this, but this is kind of the classic. Everybody looks at each other and goes, ooh, I am a hole. I am a hole in your butt. Whoosh. Things go out of me. Yes, but sometimes things go in me. I am, you know, like... I have many names. Chocolate starfish. The black hole. Right? So like you're and like sometimes you'll be going whoosh, whoosh. Yeah. You know, like you're making up. So it's to generate ideas. The first thing that you do as a group and the first initial exposure that the audience has to your show is this sort of act of generating material to carry on through throughout the rest of your show.
So it'd be like the theme of the show, the theme of the butthole show is like getting rid of the things that are no longer good in your life.
Exactly. And you get to that by kind of repeating it and saying things and like moving around and making eye contact, right? So like they aren't sure what's going to happen. The audience is watching something that is really weird, right? And if they've never seen it, it feels uncomfortable. Like they're rarely ever entertaining. They're almost always entertaining because the cringe factor is like a 10.
Yeah.
And also like it's really fun to watch people agree on stage, like to build on each other's ideas and to create an energy and a vibe. But basically you're doing all this to get to a theme to carry through the rest of the show. So it would be like getting rid of stuff, right?
Yeah.
And then you would have scenes about people moving out and scenes about people breaking up and scenes about people who just feel like a piece of shit. You know, it would be like that as you move forward. And as you start to knit those things together, even though the audience kind of is really uncomfortable and might hate you, especially if they thought they were coming to see stand-up, they might be like, whoa, that's crazy that they connected those ideas. Right. Oh my God, that guy came back 10 minutes later in the piece and he's like married to this lady. You know, they start to get...
Right. It started by him wiping his butt, but ended with him wiping the slate clean.
Right, exactly. So it's like...
Fresh beginnings.
It really slaps you in the face. It's like you don't really know what you're getting into. And then like you don't, it's not a familiar sort of space to be in to see a bunch of people unsure of what's going to happen, like repeating things and moving around. But as it goes, like you can't, sometimes you just can't deny the brilliance of like what happens with like a collective mind that comes up with a cool story.
Yeah, I know. I mean, when the shows are good, they rock the house harder than I've ever seen any comedy experience rock a live audience. And I've seen the best stand-ups in some of the best venues and clubs. And I will admit, stand-up is a million times cooler than improv, and it's better in every way. But when it actually comes to truly rocking a crowd, where the crowd just is going crazy, losing their mind, almost like a sporting event.
Yeah.
Nothing can really compare to the top notch, most hitting every chord improv shows.
I mean, it's kind of true. And I think a big part of this is because the audience is so heavily connected to the experience because you're not putting on a play for them that's already been written. You know, you're creating it in and they're whatever, like even... They give a suggestion and that shapes the show. So like butthole is the suggestion and that's their contribution to the show.
Yeah.
And it's a huge contribution. But then the other thing is that their energy really shapes the way that the show moves forward. So if certain characters are eliciting a certain response, you know, you'll shift the way that you present that character later in the show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was just talking to my parents talking about they went to a stand-up show in Vegas, you know, at a little club. They saw two shows. They saw my parents just like love stand-up these days. They went to go see Kathleen Madigan in a big theater, right?
Yeah.
And she's just up there just doing her set and killing it. They love Kathleen Madigan. The next day, they go to the Comedy Cellar, which is like a more small, intimate club. They just opened one in Vegas. And it's different. They have like four or five different comics each doing 12 or 15 minutes or whatever. Mm-hmm. And in there, there's tons of audience interaction because maybe a drink is spilled and they make a comment. And my parents, big takeaway was like, that was actually more entertaining, even though the biggest Kathleen Madigan fans in the world, being in a club and having a spontaneous moment happen was their most memorable, you know, funny moment of all the comedy experiences they went through. And I hear that all the time, be like, oh, the funniest part of the stand-up show was when they started talking to a person in the audience based on the way they looked or whatever.
Or a mistake, you know, right, that you recover from in a really funny way and like some sort of thing that feels authentic in the moment.
So that's true within stand-up, right?
Yeah.
So in improv, just imagine the whole show is that.
Right.
You're in on the language being created and you're in on every moment with the performers while they're doing it.
Right. And it is an experience that you really can't get. I mean, basically, like, you know, as the world has changed and developed, we just see a lot less live things and we have an incredible access to very excellent filmed entertainment. Right. Like, I'm not dogging that at all. There's so many good TV shows. There's so many good movies. We have access to streaming all of these things and we can do them on our phones. We can do them anywhere. And then, you know, the next level is like stand up, right? Which typically is scripted and rehearsed, you know, on
stage. Yeah.
And
it's
and
developed.
Honed and
yeah,
developed.
It's an act.
Right. It's an act. And then, or you'll have music, which is a lot of the time, unless you're watching jazz, is basically the same thing. These really perfectly crafted songs and that are rehearsed, or you have plays.
Yeah.
And then there's this tiny subset of just like being in a room with 10 sweaty adults being like, butthole. And it's the weirdest thing. You know, I think it's a really, it's hard to explain.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you have to kind of have an access point to it. You know,
right.
It's hard to explain because if you walked in and you saw improv, or maybe your only experience is seeing a really bad improv show, you'd just be like, why does this exist? This is so embarrassing. It's a hard sell.
Impossible. It's very rare to go see an improv show. I shouldn't say very rare. There's great improvisers out there. I don't mean very rare, but there's probably a pretty good chance that you went to go see an improv show and it felt like, wow, those guys probably just learned how to do that.
Right. Or like they're really trying hard. Right. Yeah. But you might not have been transported, you know, or have had this really unique experience.
Yeah.
But the thing is that those experiences are something you kind of can't get anywhere else.
Yeah.
And so once you start seeing those and like consistently seeing those, we saw a lot. I mean, obviously in Chicago, there's just so much good work. And like you start seeing the potential of where you could go and the risks that people take and the crazy stuff they accomplish. And then you might have a taste of that where you start to get a little better in shows.
Right.
And you're doing these things. I mean, Nick and I have done shows in front of just bars of people who hate that we're there.
Yeah.
And like, you know, venues that thought we were something completely different. Like, we might have talked about this, but one time we had a friend whose daughter, she had an elementary school daughter and she wanted to sell something for the auction.
Right. It was like a fundraiser.
Right. It was a fundraiser. And she said, will you guys do something? And we were like, well, we're workshopping a new musical.
Yeah.
And that's the piece that we have ready to go right now. So if they want to like come and listen to maybe a handful of songs that we're developing.
Yeah, right. The idea was you can win an auction to come watch us work our process.
Right, exactly. And then answer questions and then show them some of the material and talk about the process.
Right, because at the time, Muriel and I were kind of coming off a little bit of a hotshot two-man sketch show we had done. So people were sort of talking about it just a little bit. So we're like, had a little bit of buzz going. And we're like, we're going to sell this thing and you get the absolute honor of watching us rehearse.
I mean, you know, we were tripping. But we sold this thing and she was like, yeah, that sounds great. And then they show up. We had rented a hall.
Yeah.
And they showed up to the hall and they were like, I don't, what, 60 people? It was a massive amount of people. And they came with like boxes of liquor. Yeah. And they go, hey, we're here for the interactive drinking play. And Nick and I were just like, what? No. Like, so we went outside with our piano player.
Yeah.
And he's just like chain smoking cigarettes. And he's like, well, what the fuck are we going to do? Yeah. And so Nick and I did this show where we performed our sketch show. We just did it.
We showed them some funny things.
Right. We scratched the whole thing. And then we pulled a guy on stage and we interviewed him for like 5 minutes about his life and his likes and dislikes and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then we did like a 25-minute musical about the dreams that he would have that night.
Yeah.
And people were hyped.
It was one of the best shows we ever did.
It was insane. And none of them had ever seen improv before.
Yeah,
and it was like the perfect, you know.
Just like slamming Yellowtail.
Just, I mean, everybody was kind of like maybe in their 40s and 50s and just like, just getting drunk. And like, we were bringing back ideas about like Schomburg Police and all of these different things, learning how to drive or whatever. And they were screaming. It was just like the best, craziest thing to witness and to like be a part of with people that probably have never seen anything like that before. Like, they didn't even know what they were watching.
Interactive drinking play.
Oh, you know, you have to just do it. You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. But yeah, there's been a lot of, I mean, Nick and I did a show once and there was a guy who was super messed up on drugs and we scared him. And he started hollering in the middle of the theater. And so when he started hollering, we would start hollering. And that would make him scream louder. And then we would edit the scene and come back.
Yeah, then he would calm down.
He would calm down. But he was just having a really bad trip. Yeah. I was pretending to be a talking cat. It was during the time that...
one of the Planet of the Apes movies had come out.
Yeah, like the Planet of the Apes movies, like revival was like super viral at the moment. Yeah. I think it was like probably 2012 or something like that. And we were being cats. This is like a perfect example of improv. We're being cats, okay? It's failing, okay? Everyone hates
us.
There's
four people in the audience.
There's four people in the audience, and Nick and I are crawling around the room going, meow, meow, and we're not saying anything. And it's lasting for like 2 minutes. We don't know where it's going. We're eating crap. It's just like terrible. And then I stood up like the ape in Planet of the Apes, really slowly, like deformed, and stood up. And I go, my name is Mittens. And then Nick stood up and did the same thing. And there's a silence, like a beat. And then the guy in the audience just goes, ah, ah.
Like ran out of the theater.
You know, and like those moments are just like solid, you know, to pull yourself out of the depths of failure and land something that really is just so funny.
Yeah. Well, and then not only are you being judged by the audience, but after you go through these classes at IO, we were some of the very select few people that were actually lucky enough to get cast within the theater. So now we get to be performers at the theater. But guess what? Now you're at the bottom of the like pyramid or whatever. So we're also just being judged by all the asshole improvisers who have been there for 10 years.
I mean,
like, this
like
new
the,
team sucks.
It's a cycle of life, you know? Yeah. You go through classes and then out of 100 kids, I think they picked 15 or something like that to go on to be on these house teams.
Yeah.
And Nick and I were on the same house team with a bunch of people that we're still friends with today and still love very, very much. And like, we were just like everyone hated us. You'd go into a bar and people would just be rolling their eyes. They would look at you. I mean, it was just like, it was so crazy.
Yeah.
But, you know, you just kept slamming your hand in that door. Yeah, right. it was worth it for those moments where you're having a crazy favorite thing that happened. You know?
So then after all of that, we moved out to LA and basically just repeated the cycle again.
Yeah, we took classes again
because we were all like, well, we've performed at Second City and I was on the blah 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 team and we did this and Muriel toured with this company and blah blah blah. And everyone in LA is like, are you on a TV show? No, then we don't care.
Right, which was actually really liberating.
Yeah, it was actually fun to start over again, literally signing up for like Improv 101.
Right, and there wasn't like a pecking order because it was just kind of like...
Well, the pecking order just changes very abruptly. Suddenly, if they recognize you from a commercial, then you have clout.
Well, kind of, but then it's like if you don't book anything for a year, then you don't. You know? I thought what I really liked about it was like... In Chicago, the only thing that was a bummer was that there just isn't a lot of work. And so people are just really tight about, like, all of a sudden you're not going home for Christmas because there's a chance that you could, you know, sit in on a team that's playing. You know, like you start really giving too much weight to the importance of the work that's happening and, like, letting go of stuff that, like, you shouldn't have to let go. That's what really gets into the cult part of the situation. Yeah, yeah. So like when you get, that's the cool thing about LA. I mean, for me, it's, there's just less stuff to watch that's interesting to me.
Yeah.
But what's cool is like the scale of the pecking order is just too big. I mean, Scarlett Johansson's at the top of it. So nobody's tripping that hard.
On who's in between.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's just a little less like hierarchical in that way. And so then it just becomes about play again. And that's how I've felt the last handful of years is just playing with my friends.
Yeah,
and
right.
Not really putting a lot of emphasis on whether or not it's good or bad, but putting more emphasis on like being present and, you know, trying to really tap into what it's like to do this with a pure heart, not worry about the consequences.
Well, and then, you know, Muriel and I got put on the team at what was called the Nerdist Theater, and then is now the Ruby Theater. And that team we got put on changed our life. Those are just like our greatest people. It was like the improv God just gave us this gift of like, all right, every Sunday you get to hang out with the 8 coolest people in the whole world.
Yeah.
And this is, and they're our social life. And it's just, I don't know. Like,
we've created stuff with everybody and we've made all this stuff in LA with our friends that we've met doing that. I mean, and it's amazing because as you get older, it's harder to hold on to your friends. And it's amazing to have this opportunity to just see people every week.
Right. It's like, every Sunday you're going to go to this theater. You're going to hang out for 30 minutes. You're going to do a show. The theater might be packed. It might be empty. And then afterwards, you're going to hang out for an hour at the bar next door. You can do that every Sunday. Well, guess what? After a year and a half, those are your best friends.
Yeah, you love them.
Your best friends. And then we've been doing that for years.
And like you fail together and succeed together and you like work. I mean, it sounds
corny. Your hopes get high together and then you all just, you know, go ahead and accept the fact that like this is nothing more than a hobby together.
Right. I mean, it's very, I don't know. And it's corny, but it's like a lot of this has to do with developing your communication skills as an adult. So like sometimes you'll do a scene with someone you love very much and you don't feel listened to.
Yeah.
And like, you know, you're like, I'm mad about that. You know what I mean? And then you go have a drink and they're like, sorry about that. And you're like, you know, it's okay or whatever. Or you do something that kind of steps on toes and you talk it out or like, you know, it gives you this
just sensitive adults being friends.
Yeah, and it gives you an outlet to continue to be sensitive. Yeah, you know, like we're not shutting ourselves off. You continue to be open and, you know, or you have these experiences where you have this great scene and you walk off the stage and you just feel so close to that person.
Yeah.
I did a show once that I just really loved with a... I just kept making our friend Tom... I just kept trying to make him kiss me, but he wouldn't. So yeah, we were just like playing the show. And then, I was playing his girlfriend, and I just kept being like, I love you so much, honey. And he'd be like, okay. I'm like, give me a kiss. And then he'd give it on my cheek, and I go, you know that's not what I meant.
And then I was on the sideline, and he was like, okay, well, maybe later when we go in the tent. And I'm just like, cut to the tent. My other favorite time that you sexually harassed Tom on stage was
come on.
you guys were slow dancing, so you're kind of like spinning so that, you know, one of you guys' back is to the audience at any given time, and then you're kind of slow dance.
We were playing like middle schoolers.
And then so when your back was to the audience, his hands kind of like went down to your butt, but then we're all, you know, like nervous, and then like had second guess, and then like went back up
hovering,
and then they like went back up, so you like didn't touch your butt. So, but by the time his back was to the audience, you were just firmly grabbing both of his ass cheeks with your hands. Yeah, poor Tom.
I know.
Hey, sometimes the boys just have to take what's theirs. You know, by that I mean get what's coming to them.
Yeah, maybe that's the
Anyways, yeah. As you guys could tell, or maybe not, or whatever. After now, you can definitely tell. Performing was just a huge part of our life. I mean, I did a lot more stand-up than I did improv the last few years, but regardless, being on stage and doing improv has been so huge for us. Then COVID comes and everything shuts down. IO, that theater we mentioned earlier, gone forever. Completely shut down. Completely shut down in Chicago and their Los Angeles thing. Second City shut down and then sold off to some like corporate bank holding company or something, so it still exists, but it's like a corporate shill situation. I don't know what's going with that. Ruby is not gone for good, but definitely lost their space. UCB, where Muriel's been performing for years, closed down one of their theaters in LA. One of them is still open. And then in New York, I think both of the New York locations are closed. Like, these things are dropping like flies. Annoyance in Chicago is still in business, but it's literally turning into a dying art form. I mean, well, these places are the places that started it, that have been the bedrock of it, are going out of business and ending.
Right. And so then we're just kind of here holding the bag. I mean, people who've spent 13 years of your life, you know, you sit there and you're like, whoa, was this just a weird thing I got into?
Yeah,
like,
right.
Is this something that has no legs, you know?
Yeah,
and
right.
We'll see. I mean, I think all theaters are suffering right now, and live right. venues aren't, restaurants are. So I think that we will see a bounce back in like 2022 and beyond.
Some sort of resurgence.
Yeah, but it's crazy to think these historical tentpoles of the medium and of the art form are just gone. And then you have people like us who are just like, I mean, I'm like, how am I a torch carrier now? Like, am I the next generation of this? Like, or if I choose not to, is this gone forever? You know, like,
well, there is probably very few people that have taken as many classes and been a part of as many theaters as you and I. I mean, we really did a bunch in Chicago at multiple theaters, and then did a bunch in LA at multiple theaters.
I know, man. You'd think we'd be better at this thing.
But you know what? Tentpole is still going strong.
What?
Unexpected Productions.
They're still alive.
They're still alive, baby, in the heart of downtown LA at historic Pike Place Market.
Downtown Seattle.
Downtown
my friend.
Seattle. My bad. My bad.
We went to our classic pre-game spot. We got to go with Nick's mom, which was so fun
because she's been taking improv classes before the pandemic,
and I know she's so good at it. I'm like so excited to see her do it someday.
Yeah.
So we had snacks and drinks at the bar beforehand.
Il Bistro, one of the best Seattle happy hours in the history of the world. So if anyone's in Seattle at the Pike Place Market in that happy hour zone, check out Il Bistro.
Yeah, it's really beautiful spot. We sat there, we talked about life, we got ourselves ready in the headspace to see some improv. We got over to the theater, we were like, let's have a drink at the theater. That sounds so great. We get over there, they have people there setting up, the bartender's in place, they're not going to open the doors. Everything is awkward. In all things improv, I think most of the time no one has nailed anything because we're just kind of sensitive people.
Yeah,
you know, so we were like, okay, so you're not going to let us come in. I mean, you can make money that way. If you open the door, we're going to spend money there instead of going to the stupid bar. We couldn't get in. So then we got in. Didn't you have a funny experience with the ticket guy?
The guy was just like, you already got your tickets? Like, he was just so, he wasn't welcoming or friendly or nice in any way. They're charging $15 a ticket. That's that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, that's significant. You know, it's just like, he, not like, how are you guys doing today? Hey, do you, did you make reservations? No sort of customer service. Just remarkably awkward. Mm-hmm. Just whatever the awkwardness of not opening the door or just all of the nerdiness of improv just crystallized in my interaction with the ticket guy.
Well, the lady who poured me my wine was super nice. And then we carried our wine into the theater. We got a table right behind the piano player, right behind the bar. I mean, the band, which is great. We walked in and immediately there was like a group of kids, like maybe in their early 20s, who were very clearly students.
Yeah.
And we walked in and they were like staring at us, you know, because they were like,
who are those guys? Are they, do they have clout? Are they?
Not even that. Just like, I don't know what it was. But they were just like staring at us like we're not someone familiar.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
And probably like all improv theaters, you know, 90% of the audience, you know. So like somebody who's excited about improv and is talking about improv but they don't know, you know, oh, who's that, you know? And then there were a bunch of tourists, which was awesome.
Yeah, they had a pretty good crowd. I gotta say, we performed for a lot less people on Sunday nights in LA than they performed out here.
It was great. And they were all spread out across the theater. They had no ushers, so we were all like, really far away from each other.
You need to see people towards the front, man.
We were all far away from the stage. And then we open up and everybody comes out on stage. You got your show clothes on, right? Which are like inoffensive slacks and t-shirts. You know.
Not t-shirts, like button-downs and blouses.
Yeah, blouses.
Like a business casual, basically.
Exactly. I used to have so much business casual stuff. For, and like plain shoes for running around on stage and like ways to hold my hair back to be like ready to go. And they took the stage and they did this thing that was so classic and so great, which is you can walk on stage and you can say, hey, everybody, welcome to the theater. We're so glad you're here. We're going to do a piece for you. We just need a word to get started.
Yeah.
Or you can go like, hey, yay, look at all the people. And then you go, okay, so where are you from? And then she, the host of the thing was like, where are you from? Oh, good. Okay, what's your mom like? Where did you go to school?
Meanwhile, every single person in the audience is like, you literally can't drain the energy more. I'm dead at this point. Suck like, every bit of energy out of that room.
When you think that's done, then you move to the next person and go, oh, hey, are you from Seattle? No, where are you from? And she did that for five people. Where, like, it took about 20 minutes and nobody wanted to talk.
Yeah.
And then nobody was also remembering anything that the people had actually volunteered to say.
Yeah.
And they were not asking any questions. So it was just like a lot of like nice to meet you sort of thing. But it's like, I've been there. Yeah, I know what it's like.
Yeah, yeah.
I know what it's like to sit on the stage. Nobody likes to host, right? Like to go out and say like, hey, everybody, welcome to the thing. Bathrooms are over here.
Yeah.
Tip your bartender. Usually that's the most hated thing. So nobody likes to do it. It's a toy, it's a coin toss to decide who's going to do it.
Yeah.
And then that poor soul has to go out and get the suggestion, right? And so I like all love on that person because I know I don't like doing it.
Yeah.
But then when you fail at doing it or you just kind of do it in a way that alienates the audience, then I've also been one of those people on stage that slowly creeps to the back of the
of the back wall.
Everybody's just like, oh my god, stop. And that person's like, I can't stop.
So after 20 minutes of having a rough time getting suggestions from the audience, they started their show. And God bless them, you know, it was great. We were sitting there watching improv again for the first time in a year and a half.
And they had a great show and it was very fun. I mean, that's what it goes to show you. Like, we've done so many of like, I'm a butthole openings, right? Where the audience is like, ah, and then towards the end, you're all having a great time, you know? And that's part of the magic of it. It's like failing, recovering, failing again, recovering way harder, nailing it,
yeah,
failing, nailing it, you know.
Well, I think I want to get on stage again. And this Unexpected Productions Theater on Wednesdays, they have have a duo open mic. Okay, so you can just sign, you can go up and as a comedy duo, you can just sign up and get some stage time. So I want to go watch it one Wednesday just for you. And then the following Wednesday, I think we should do it. I think we should get on stage again. I think it would be so fun.
I know. I may not do that.
Why not?
I don't know if I feel like it, man. I don't like you anymore.
Butthole!
Oh, you are.
Let's do yoga. Let's get fit.
Thank you for listening.
Everything about you guys is incredible. If you're into Hell in Your 30s, please hit up www.patreon.com/hellinyour30s. Give us a few dollars a month. You unlock bonus episodes and you go to bed feeling all warm and tingly that you're supporting your favorite DIY indie podcaster.
Yes. Thank you to Ryan and Ryan for all your producing prowess.
And shout out to all the people out there who used to perform all the time before this pandemic and are trying to figure out how it's going to re-enter your life, you know. Mm-hmm. We love you.
God bless.
Okay. We and also, I don't know, I want to keep talking to you guys, but we're just going to end this. Just know that we love you. Bye.
Bye.
Have you ever encountered an unexplained hairy bipedal hominid in the woods?
Have you received telepathic messages from an unidentified aerial phenomenon?
If so, then you need to listen to Bigfoot Collectors Club. I'm Michael McMillan.
And I'm Bryce Johnson.
And together with super producer
Riley Bray,
we make up the Bigfoot Collectors Club.
That's right. Every week we talk to actors, comedians, writers, and paranormal experts about their personal paranormal histories and share stories of high strangeness.
Like the time when we talked to Craig Ferguson about the Loch Ness Monster and when a sea witch told him he had raven magic.
Or the time I asked Pitch Perfect's Anna Camp her opinion on cattle mutilations. Past guests have included Rachel Bloom, Jen Kirkman, Paul F. Tompkins, Bobcat Goldthwait, and more.
So if you've ever been abducted alongside five reindeer by an alien with drills for hands or witnessed Bigfoot crawl out of an interdimensional portal,
don't laugh, happens all the time.
Then check out Bigfoot Collectors Club on Campfire Media or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bigfoot Collectors Club, you're here to believe us.
Wait, is that how it goes?
Campfire.